Why do I conduct my show on this manner? Mundo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mundo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bow tie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mundo!
Oh, six of my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mundo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mundo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
For God's sake, strap yourselves down.
Grab your shorts and hold on tight. It's yet another episode of the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the Bush administration and its anti-worker policies. Hey, Sergeant Sock Puppet is here. Hiya, Sarge.
Hey, Joe, what do you know?
Sarge, what's that URL again?
That's cupojoe.blogspot.com.
And email address?
joedec@bellsouth.net.
All right. Thank you, Sarge. I want to also welcome anybody who's listening from the White Rose Society. That's whiterosesociety.org. And also to all my fans on Rant Radio. That's rantradio.com. And on Radio Power. That's radiopower.org. So many URLs. So little time. Okay. Before I begin, I have an announcement. Last week, I said that I was going to be doing two versions of the show. One for my site and one for Rant Radio and Radio Power, which have an hour slot for me. And you know what? It was so much work putting it all together. Look, I don't mind doing the extra work, but I just don't have as much time as I'd like to do this because it takes a certain amount of time to produce the show to begin with. And it takes more time when I have to complicate it by doing two different shows. So what I decided to do was that I'm only going to do the one-hour version of the song, and I'm going to take out the music. I really hate to take out the music because I like the music, and I like playing some of the goofy stuff for you, but the fact of the matter is it's taking me far too long to just decide the songs to begin with and put them all in together and throw the show all together. So from now on, the show will be 1 hour long, and there will be no music. There will be some musical drops in between, some musical interludes, but there will be no music anymore as far as the show is concerned. I will throw in the occasional comedy routine. And the show will be recorded in stereo and put on the URL that way and put on the stream that way. It'll be a 64K stereo, which is only a little bit bigger than, well, actually it's twice the size, but it's still fairly small for you dial-up people, and you can get the show in stereo. It sounds much better quality. Yeah. I am so fucking fed up with my job. Now, you know, I was out of work for a very long time, almost a year, 11 months, I was out of work. And I don't want to say I was miserable, but it was horrible because, obviously, you don't have any money. And I was very happy to finally get another job again when Siemens called up, you know, when I got in there. And I was there for about a month as a temp. Then they let me go, lay me off for about, I guess, 2 or 3 months. And then I got picked up right when I was at the end of my rope. And I was so happy to go to work. And, you know, you get in that position where you haven't worked for a long time, and you're just so happy to get a job and earn some money and all that stuff. And, you know, it feels wonderful. But then the same bullshit goes on and on again that you had at, you know, previous jobs. And, you know, all jobs are the same in that sense. That there's always a certain amount of bullshit that you just put up with for the sake of putting up with. And it just gets old after a while. You would think after a while, you know, people would grow up. As people grow older, they would grow more mature, or that, you know, you could look at a job as just being a job and not have to worry about all the other bullshit that goes along on the side. What happened to me today was just a perfect example. And it happens every time, all over the place. Every job I've been to has happened like this. But in this job in particular, it's galling. But let me tell you what happened today. I go into work, and it starts out, it's a nice enough day. I mean, it's busy, but it's not crazy busy, you know. Well, we were getting to a point where we had some stuff coming down the line. And for those of you who haven't listened to the show, I work on what they call a paint line. Basically, when the metal parts are finished, they get put over this in this on this conveyor belt, which is like an overhanging conveyor belt, which takes them into paint, and they get painted, and they come back. And my job is to take them off on my end and put them down neatly in a pallet or in a big metal basket they have. And they had a piece of what we call trim, which is anything that's basically not a box. We make circuit boxes. But we had a piece of trim that was coming down, and we did not have a basket for it. We had no place to put this. And we were upset about this because when we had come in, the guy, the forklift driver from day shift, could not take the baskets away and bring us, you know, empty ones because his forklift had died or something like that. And our forklift guy is basically on his own because one guy left and another guy went to day shift. So he's doing the job work of three people, basically. So he doesn't have time, and it's still fairly early in the day, you know. So this new part comes out, and we don't have a place to put it. So the only thing I can do is hit the button that turns the line off. Nobody likes to have the line turned off. I don't like to turn the line off. My coworker Dave doesn't like to have the line turned off. And the reason we don't like to have the line turned off is because it will invariably bring Kelly, the supervisor. And Kelly, we do not see hide nor fucking hair of Kelly unless the line is stopped. God forbid he should take the time to take a look and see if we need some new baskets or new pallets and to see what was going on to make sure everything is okay. No, he's almost never back there. He's mostly where people are hanging the parts to make sure they leave no hook unused. You know, making our jobs a lot more miserable and trying to, you know, just make things difficult for everybody around. I mean, there's you can hang a lot, but you can hang smarter, you know, to give us a chance to get caught up. But that's another story. Now, you know, he comes over and he's obviously upset that we don't have a place to, you know, to put these parts and we have to stop the line. And, you know, his attitude is like, it's our fault, you know. We have to keep up. And of course, you know, if we don't have a place to put the stuff, there's nothing we can do about it. Of course, this concept is not, he does not grasp. He doesn't understand this very basic concept. If I don't have some place to put it, if Dave and I do not have some place to put a part, we have to stop the line. We cannot throw these parts on the floor. Well, they pull out, there was a basket that had stuff in it, and finally the forklift driver, you know, pulls that one up to get a new basket. And there's a basket on the floor. It's basically, you can stack these baskets too high. They're very heavy metal baskets. It's like if you imagine a net, but the net is made with steel and metal. And they each weigh about 130 pounds. They're not light. They weigh that much by themselves. And they have to be very heavy because they're holding a lot of parts. They can hold upwards of about a ton worth of parts. And I'm not kidding. I've seen baskets weigh that much when they bring them in to get weighed, when they're full of parts. And you've got a situation where now you just have like an open basket on the floor. And the ones that they hang on top, they generally flip the front door open, so it's just like an open face. But how they got one on the floor, and he says, just throw the trim down there in this basket until we get one. And he turns the line back on. It's like, thanks a lot, you know. Mess us up. So anyway, we do that, you know. And we're upset because the only time we ever see this guy is when the line's already stopped and things are trouble. You know, he doesn't take the time to take a look at the situation, what's really going on, and just, you know, to anticipate what our needs are, because we don't always have the time to do this. We're busy pulling stuff off the line. That is our job. That is what we are paid to do. And it is his job to make sure everything runs smoothly. And it's also his job to make sure we have the tools that we need to get the job done, whether you're talking about making sure that there's enough pallets or baskets for us to put stuff on, or making sure we have enough cardboard. We have these big pieces of cardboard that we sometimes put in between rows to prevent the metal from scratching itself. And very often we run out of cardboard, or the big pile of cardboard we have is very messy and very difficult to get the cardboard out of. And you don't always have a lot of time to be fooling with this stuff when you've got parts coming down the line. You know, one part will come down. I actually measured it once. Part will come down the line once every 5 seconds. And each hanger, there's like a hanger, and each hanger has two hooks on it. So you can hang two parts on there, and you can have two parts coming down every 5 seconds. For a few of these items, that's not too bad if they're sending stuff every hanger, every hook. You know, two parts per hanger, every hanger. But in some cases, you know, it takes a second to stack the stuff properly. And, you know, if you have to reach to get cardboard, And we've had that situation. But he's never around. He doesn't know. He doesn't care. He's incompetent. And he's a supervisor. His job is mainly to make sure we're not a minute late from break. That's his. He's a supervisor of breaks is what he is. So anyway, we know that all that finishes up. And for the most part, it's a decent day. They're hanging mainly one part. I call them IC chips. I really don't know how to describe them. They look kind of like little chips, but they're much larger, obviously, than real computer chips. And basically, you're just stacking them fairly neatly in a basket. There are quite a few coming, but, you know, it's not one of the more difficult parts to handle. And that's intermixed with a few boxes and some other stuff. So generally, it's been a good day. Now, I get off work at midnight. My last break is at 11 o'clock, and I know that seems kind of late. Don't ask me. From 11 to 11:10, I have my break. Well, it was about a quarter till 11, and I had to use the bathroom really bad. I get this thing happen. I've got problems with my stomach sometimes. My digestive system is a little messed up. That's what happens when you get old, kids. All you young kids today listening to Sean Kennedy and all these other shows with these young punks. I'm telling you, when you get old, you're going to have these problems. That's what happened to old bastards like me. We have these problems. But anyway, it's about quarter till 10 till, I think, is what it's 11 o'clock. And 11 o'clock is when the third shift comes in, the midnight to 8:30 shift. And so I told Dave, my co-worker, can you handle these parts? Because it's the very easy parts coming down. So I'm basically going to go and you just go through my break. Because when you got to go, you got to go. So I run out and I take care of my business and I come back. And that was my mistake. I should have stayed in the damn bathroom. I should have stayed in the damn bathroom and just hide. Because, you know, no matter how much work you do, no matter how much hard work you do, they never fucking appreciate it. So I come back to my spot, and the supervisor's there, and he's like, come on, I need you to help you over here and hang in parts on this end. And, you know, I'm back in, we have two lines that do the same thing, and I was back on the other line, which is what they call the money line. A lot of bigger parts are up there, and I'm hanging these other parts, and I'm putting them on the line instead of taking them off. And I'm like, man, it is like quarter after 11. It's been a long night, and even though it hasn't been one of the more difficult nights, it's been a busy night. And so I'm not going to kill myself, and there's no point in it. I'm not going to refuse to do work. I mean, that's grounds for firing there, and it should be grounds for firing, but I'm not going to refuse to do work. But while I'm there, the first, like, 5 or 10 minutes or so that I'm there, my supervisor and the third shift supervisor are just standing there talking and yakking and having a good old time and just watching other people work. I fucking hate that. I hate supervisors who do that. I hate being watched while I work. If you can't trust me to do my job on my own, then you should fucking fire me. That's my feeling. Don't sit there and watch over me like I'm a little kid. Because I come in and I do my goddamn job. I do my fucking work. I am a mature, responsible person. And I resent being looked at. They know I do my work. I could see it if it was like my first day or my first week there, but I've been there for like 3 or 4 months. They know I fucking come in there and work, and I don't bullshit around. Now at 11 o'clock when they have the day shift, the early shift comes in, I think it's really, they count it as the first shift of the day because it begins literally at midnight. There's a couple extra people there, so we generally can take it a little easy. And we keep talking about how they should change the shifts around so that there's not that long overlap. They could have three different shifts, and each one of them has a half an hour overlap. So that for the people who are getting ready to go home, you can you know, take it a little easier because you have some extra help there. And for the people coming in, you get a little settled, and you have some extra forklift drivers so you can get, you know, the old baskets out and put new clean ones in, or, you know, not clean ones but empty ones. You know, just a chance for everybody to get organized. And that way you don't have to stop the line. You know, and the one line, they have to stop the line. So anyway, here I am. I'm sitting there hanging this shit on the line. And they're just sitting around yapping. And I'm just like, I'm not going to kill myself for these people. You know, it's not my fault that there's, you know, the shifts overlap for an hour. And that they have extra people over there. That's not my fault. I don't design the damn schedule. And after they get finished yakking, you know, the night shift supervisor, the next shift supervisor, he comes up to me and he starts bitching at me about putting something on every single hook. And I'm doing every other hook, every third hook. Look, whatever I grab out of the basket and whenever I reach up, whatever hook I grab, that's the hook I'm putting it on. And I told him, I said, this is as fast as I can go. This is as fast as I am going to. Well, I said, well, this is as fast as I can go, which I suppose technically is a lie because I could have gone a lot faster. But you know what? It's not worth it to do that. And he's trying to tell me to get on every hook. I'm saying, this is how fast I'm going. And he's like, well, you know, they're going to... I said, yeah, well, whatever. And I'm just doing... I'm not refusing to do the work. But they've got two other people they're hanging. They don't need me there. They're just moving me there because they don't like the idea of me not having something specific to do. So here I've reached a point now where I realize that I'm going to have to hide out. And I don't like hiding out. And this is what pisses me off. It's making me go against my nature. And my nature is to do a little extra help, do a little extra work, help out where I can. You know, that's my nature. It's like when I come in. If I come in early, and I usually come in, and now because I take an earlier bus, I usually come in about 45 minutes. I eat some lunch. And I'll usually get to where the line is about a quarter till 3. Or a quarter after 3, excuse me. 3:30 is when I start. And, you know, I'll just make sure, you know, I'll take a look around and see if there's any, you know, if we need to arrange any pallets or if we have, you know, what kind of baskets we have and what the situation is there. Then I'll go over to where they're hanging the parts and to get an idea of what I'm going to be expecting for that night, you know. But I don't do any work. I won't pull any stuff off the line. I have a very strict rule off of that. Until that 3:30 bell rings, I don't do shit as far as that's concerned. I don't do shit because the second I do that, then they're going to start assuming that I'm going to do that all the fucking time. They just take advantage of you. They just take advantage of you. And I am fed up with it. And I'm fed up with my job. And I'm just like, well, there's supposed to be layoffs coming up on May 15th, and we'll see. I don't know if I'm going to get laid off or not. But frankly, I'm at the point where I wish they would fucking lay me off. I'm not going to quit. And I'm not going to do anything that's going to get me fired. But I'm hoping that they will lay me off, because if they lay me off, I can just get unemployment, and then I can, you know, take my time looking for work again. But it just annoys me that they're driving people like myself, and I'm a hard worker. You can ask anybody I've worked with. I mean, there's certain things I'm not capable of. I mean, I'm not a very strong person. I don't have the best stamina in the world, but I do the best that I can, and I do a pretty decent job. And they're driving me away. They're driving me away with this stupid, petty bullshit. And it's one of my pet peeves at work, where if there's nothing to do, they'll sit there and they'll try to find something for you to do. And I'm like, look, I'm not paid to be – it's not aerobics. I'm not paid to be physically active all the time. I'm paid to do a specific job. And if you can't find, you know, enough for me to do, that is not my problem. I am not going to go digging around finding stuff for me to do, because you know what? It won't make a damn bit of difference at this shop. Because whether you keep your job and whether you get laid off, it doesn't depend on how hard you've worked. This is all seniority. And I get paid the same amount of money whether I pull 8,000 parts off a line or 4,000 parts off the line. I get paid the same money. And quite frankly, I don't want to be in a situation where they where you're getting like money from the parts you put on or take off, because that just means that I'm going to have to start fighting among my other workers. You know, who's going to get a few more dollars here and there. And I'm telling you, the bosses really love that. Supervisors love that when they pull that shit and when the workers are turned against each other. But I'm sure you can all identify with me what I'm talking about. All the simple little bullshit. You know, a supervisor's job, a manager's job, an owner's job, whatever, their job is to make sure you have the things that you need to do your job. I shouldn't have to sit there and worry about whether or not we're going to have to stop the line because we've run out of fucking cardboard. Or because I don't have a place to put stuff on. And then they blame you for it when it's not your fault. I don't have the time to go around and make sure of this shit. We can take a quick glimpse of what they're hanging because we can see it from where we work. But if we're busy pulling stuff off the line, we don't have time for that. And we can't just leave the line and look when this part's coming down. And I'm sure you all know what I'm talking about. They're always putting shit on you that's their responsibility. When I was the manager of that one-hour photo lab, I made very clear to the people that I hired what I expected out of them and further what they can expect out of me. And I made sure that they had everything they needed to do their job so that they didn't have to sit there and do something that takes away from them dealing with the customers and running the film. That was their job, dealing with the customers and running the film. And my job is to go in there and make sure they have all the things that they need. It's like my job is to pull stuff off a line and stack it neatly. My job is not to go around and dig up cardboard or find a basket or flag down the forklift driver every time that, you know, we've got a new part coming down and we don't have a place to put it. That's not my fucking job. And I don't understand why it is that they feel the need. I don't understand why it is that this is so disorganized. There's no fucking reason for it to be that way. There is absolutely no reason for it to be that way. Ah, well. But again, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. It's you know, if you quit and take another job, it's the same old shit. That's why my brother left his job. You know, my brother had a really good paying job, and he left it because he was sick of it. He was sick of being treated like a fucking robot. And he'll tell you the same thing. They were working like 50, 60 hours a week. He never had any spare time. He never had any free time. And they were treating him like shit. And he's just like, when they said, the hell with it. He gave us 2 weeks' notice and he left. And my thoughts were good for him. Good for him. So I'm kind of hoping that I get laid off. Because I get fed up with it. You know, I would really love nothing more than to be able to do this radio show full time. You know, if I was doing this, you know, for a living or something, I could do this every day, you know, because I can't do it by myself like I'm doing all the time. But, you know, I could sit here and talk every day, talk to people on the phone or just talk about things going on. I could do that every single day. I would love to do that every single day. But a job like that just isn't going to happen right away. And I'm stuck doing what I'm doing. And, you know, and I wouldn't mind it so much. You know, it would be a job I would love to keep for 15 or 20 years. If the situation were like that. But the situation isn't like that. Because America's going to hell in a handbasket. And the reason why it's going to hell in a handbasket is partly because there's a few rich, greedy bastards out there who are busy conspiring ways to rob everybody blind to put money in their pockets. And it's because us working people aren't working together to protect ourselves. You know, when I was overhanging stuff today in that other area, this one girl's going crazy hanging stuff on as many hooks as she can. And I'm just like, every other hook, every third hook, you know. Because I'm not killing myself. Granted, they were just coming in, so maybe they had a whole lot of energy. But I certainly wasn't about to waste all the energy that I had on that shit. Oh, man, I need something to drink. Play us out, Sarge.
We'll be right back with more on the Hobbit Hill Radio Show.
Welcome to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. She's back! Bush's dominatrix and world-class liar has returned to the pro-Republican mainstream media circuit after a self-imposed exile in Texas to lay slimeball siege to any Democrat who threatens the village idiot of the world. Forget for the moment that George W. Bush has the courage of a weasel. Also overlook, if you can, that the dim-witted Dauphin Prince has such meager ability that you could fit all of his skills in a thimble and still have room left over for two raisins and Dick Cheney's heart. Karen Hughes comes from a military family and she respects hierarchy and authority. You salute the chief, and if he's Jim Jones and he offers you a glass of Kool-Aid, you drink it. And the Kool-Aid of the Bush cartel is gutter politics, so sleazy that it would disgust a snake. That's why Karen Hughes was back on the pro-Bush mainstream media circuit last week. Ostensibly, she was peddling some ridiculously self-indulgent memoir, but she had time to imply that the million women and men who marched for reproductive rights were morally equivalent to terrorists, and to deride John Kerry's decorated career in combat and anti-Vietnam War protests. Excuse us, isn't this the same woman who intimidated reporters for years into not covering the truth about Bush's time as a grounded National Guard pilot who avoided service in Vietnam and his mysterious lost in a haze of drugs and booze AWOL days? You would think that the imposing hatchet lady for an administration chock full of cowardly chicken hawks would hold her fire when it comes to Kerry's war record, and that equating being pro-choice to Osama bin Laden might not be the best way to win over the soccer mom vote. But Karen Hughes proves that being a hypocritical thug isn't limited to the male Bush loyalists. Hughes' self-laudatory book is called 10 Minutes from Normal. Well, in this administration, she's about 10 million miles from honesty and candor. That probably should have been the title of her tome. As one reviewer of her book on Amazon.com noted, Why anyone would believe a word from this amoral sow's pen is beyond me. To equate pro-choice with a 9/11 terrorist is beyond the pale. Let's hope she goes from 10 minutes from normal to deep into oblivion, and we don't have to ever hear another word of drivel from this shill's mouth ever again. Ouch. Karen Hughes, drill sergeant of the Bush Cartel Spin Squad, we salute you as the 29th BuzzFlash GOP Hypocrite of the Week. When you're finished running down a war hero like John Kerry, maybe you can write a book about the honorable Vietnam service of Bush and Cheney. I mean, it wouldn't take very long to write. It would be blank. So until next week, just remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com. So many Republican hypocrites, so little time. Catch up with you soon.
Hi, kids. George Lowe, voice of TV's beloved Space Ghost. You are barking a happy tune with my close personal friend, the lovely Joe Vecchio, on the Cut O Joe Radio Show.
Okay, we're back on the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, that URL for the blog is cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupofjoe.blogspot.com. And please write to me at joevec@bellsouth.net, or at the very least, leave a little comment in this in the open thread section for the radio show. And only a couple of people wrote in last time after I begged people, after I begged you to write in and just say hi and say, this is Steve from Cleveland or this is Bob from Peoria saying hi. Nobody writes. I do and I do and I do for you kids, and no one gives me any respect. This is the thanks I get. So write to me. Write to me. Email me. joevec@bellsouth.net. Write to me so I know that you're listening, because otherwise I think I'm just talking to myself here. And if I talk to myself too much, they might come and take me away to the funny farm, which wouldn't be such a bad idea because I could use a few laughs. That was a stupid joke and I apologize. Okay. The wife is taking a little nap. But fortunately, she doesn't wake up easily, so I can continue on doing the show. The wife doesn't feel very good. She's not in the best of health, and that's regrettable because we're poor, and in America, you know, is what happens when you're poor and sick. You get treated badly. Actually, when she had to go to the hospital last year, she got treated very well by the DeKalb Medical Center, and I want to publicly thank them for how well they treated us. I mean, they treated us like royalty, and we're just poor, and she was on Medicaid. So anyway, I was reading Creative Loafing. Now, Creative Loafing, for those of you who don't live in the Atlanta area, that's the weekly free newspaper, the independent newspaper, and they are actually much better than our regular daily newspaper, the Atlanta Urinal Constipation, as I call it, which is a piece of trash. It takes me about 10 or 15 minutes to read the daily paper every day, or when I do read it, because I don't buy it. I certainly don't put any money in their pockets. If a friend of mine's got it and I need to read it while I'm on break, I'll read it. But really, I can read the whole damn thing in about 10 minutes. But at any rate, they had an article here about MARTA, which is Atlanta's public transportation system. It stands for Metro Area Rapid Transit Authority, although the assorted racists and scumbags that occupy the suburbs and occasionally the internal part of Atlanta call it moving Africans rapidly through Atlanta, because there are a lot of black people that ride the train, and I have been in a situation many times where I was the only white person on the train or on the bus, and that really doesn't bother me too much. The only thing that bothers me on the bus is when people talk too loud. I really am not interested in people's personal lives, and I'm not interested in hearing them discussed at the top of people's lungs. Be quiet. Talk reasonably amongst yourselves. Do not yell what your personal problems are and who you're going out with at the top of your lungs. It is not necessary. It is not my business, and I do not care to hear it. Of course, this is kind of useless to say that because none of those people are listening to the show right now. And based on how many comments I'm getting, nobody's listening to the show right now. Maybe three or four people. At any rate, there was a big article about it, about MARTA, called MARTA's Fallen and I Can't Get Up. And it's by Michael Wall from Creative Loafing. Does a very good job. And let's talk about what they're talking about here. Now the problem with MARTA is the fact that it's not very efficient. Now, I grew up in New York City where they had a really strong public transportation system. And, of course, a real big city like New York and all the northeastern cities and stuff like that, where they built subways and were really built a lot, built up a lot during the Industrial Revolution. They have a very strong subway system, and they needed that because they had so many people that had to move around. Atlanta is a relatively new city in that regard, and its public transportation system started in like late 70s, early 80s, and it really hasn't been around that long. So obviously they still have a lot of work to do on it, but the problem is that the attitude of these people down here towards public transportation sucks. Certainly when you're talking about state governments, because really it's needed for Atlanta, but people in the rest of the state are resentful of it. They're resentful of Atlanta to a certain extent because, you know, we have all us bohemians living here, all us liberal types, because you don't get much of that outside. You know, out there in the country, out there where the real people, you know, I go out there to them NASCAR events. That's where the real world is. You know, the rest of the world doesn't exist outside of NASCAR and outside of our little farmhouse or whatever the hell we got out there in these friggin' boondock areas. It's like the Rick and Bubba show. Anybody listen to the fucking Rick and Bubba show? I watch these guys on TV. They do their radio show on TV. And like, who the fuck are these rednecks? Who the fuck are these assholes? You know, they do that phony Pledge of Allegiance thing every time they start their show. What the hell is up with that shit? Who are they trying to kid? Fucking retards sit there and do all the symbolism, but they don't understand anything about what it means to be a patriot. Because they're not patriots. They're nationalists. And they're redneck scum. You know, they fucking tried to overthrow this government, and here they are pledging allegiance to it. Them and their rebel fucking flags. Fuck them. Probably backstage screwing each other every chance they get. Anyway, that's off the subject. God, I go on like that. Now, the state of Georgia, according to the article, the state of Georgia does spend plenty of money on transportation projects, so long as those projects meet the state's own peculiar brand of political correctness. For instance, Department of Transportation intends to spend $291 million this year on developmental highways, roads that, by definition, are not needed to relieve congestion. Has anyone out there ever been to Atlanta? Has anyone out there ever tried to drive around Atlanta during rush hour? You just can't fucking do it. It's a parking lot out there. I-75, I-85, in both directions. And 285 especially. You know, when I was driving, I avoided 285 like the plane. 285, okay, Atlanta's got like, actually, three major highways that go through it. 75 and 85, which are like northwest and southeast. And then I-20 goes east-west. And then you have the perimeter, I-285, which is like a circle. The traffic on I-285 is horrendous. And especially when you get out what they call Spaghetti Junction, where 85 intersects with 285, and they have all the, you know, in and out and stuff like that, and going to the different streets. And it's a huge mess every single day at rush hour. And even when it's not in rush hour, sometimes it's all jammed up, whether it's an accident or just a lot of freaking people on the road. But meantime, you know, they don't want to spend, you know, any money on public transportation to help get rid of the traffic congestion. And you have the right-wing scum like Neil Bortz sitting there making fun of the people on public transportation. You know, making fun of the idea that, you know, when you go into one of the elevators on one of the MARTA stations, it smells like urine. Okay, they got problems. No one's saying it's perfect. But Jesus Christ, look at what you're doing there. Atlantans drive more. They commute more than any other city in the country. They spend more time in their cars. Most of it is because of traffic jams and because nobody here likes the very idea of public transportation. And a lot of it is in the suburbs. They don't want the niggers to come out there. And that's the plain truth. They can hide it all they want. They can talk around it. They just don't want the niggers out there. Anyway, the DOT also moved on March 18th towards approving a $106 million computer rail line to Lovejoy, a town with an approximately 2,500 people, which is about 10 miles south of Atlanta. It's about 12 miles north of Griffin, another one of them podunk towns. And the Georgia Regional Transportation Authority is spending $27.5 million on the startup and operation of three suburban bus systems that will feed into MARTA, just like it's already subsidizing the bus systems that go into Cobb County and Gwinnett County, which are the main sources of the racist attitudes around here. And on April 15th, Governor Sonny Perdue, that racist scumbag who was elected solely because he lied about whether he was going to put the Confederate battle flag back on the state flag, and of course he lied about doing that, and now all the Confederate assholes are pissed at him. He said he planned to spend a total of $15.5 billion on transportation projects. Meanwhile, the state will supply MARTA with squat. The system handles five times as many riders as those five suburban bus systems combined. But the state will give it only $2 million to purchase a few vans and some small buses for the disabled and elderly riders. Lawmakers won't give MARTA a dime for fuel, salaries, or maintenance of its stations, buses, or trains. Nor, for that matter, will they provide money for any of the system's day-to-day needs, and they never have. MARTA will maintain its most notable distinction as the only major transit agency in the country that does not get operating money from its state government. No wonder, then, that a key weapon in Metro Atlanta's battle for clean air and less congestion is dying a slow death right before our eyes. This is a fucking disgraceful event. And part of it is attitudes. And I'll get that. Let me see. Where is that quote? It's down here. Scroll down, Joe. It's down there. Let's see. Here he is. The governor's spokesman said to an out-of-town newspaper, to the Macon Telegraph, said, "Nobody rides MARTA. Its ridership is dwindling. Governor Perdue needs to be convinced that the ridership will there and that MARTA can be economically viable." Listen, you asshole. It's a public transportation system. It's not supposed to make a profit. Can't you get this through your thick fucking skull? It's not supposed to make a profit. The advantage of it is getting people off the roads and into trains and into buses so that they can get from where they need from where they live to where they work in a safe and efficient manner. So that you don't have so many roads on the car. That would be a good one. It's not supposed to make a profit. What you get in return for it is a lot less congestion, a lot less pollution, and a lot less money spent on constant road repair, which is what you're going to have to do anyway. But of course, that's good for them because they now have their nice little puppy projects with their little buddies making a fortune out of it. Now, the fiscal crisis has rushed up on MARTA. About 15 years ago, the agency was making more money than it needed to operate. An official set up a reserve fund just in case hard times ever came. By this time last year, MARTA projected had enough money in those reserves, about $35 million, to make up for another 4.5 years of budget shortfalls. But hard times arrived with a vengeance. Ridership is down 15% from 2001, which was September 11th, of course. And a 25-cent fare increase. MARTA's fare is $1.75, which makes it among the most expensive public transportation systems in the country. The agency is projected to finish 2004 with a budget shortfall of $54 million. And to make up for the lost income, MARTA officials dipped into the reserve. And despite a smaller workforce, because they've been cutting back on people, despite route cutbacks and reduced maintenance, the reserve fund has shrunk to $19 million, which is only enough money to last another year and a half. Now, if the reserves run out, MARTA will be broke. It won't have enough revenue to buy fuel for its buses or pay its employees or power its electric trains. So MARTA officials are doing the only thing they can do, they're cutting back again. And there goes the downward spiral. They cut back more. And people say, well, they're not doing enough service, so I'm not going to ride it. Ridership goes down. So they cut back more, they raise fares, and less people. You know something? I've had it with this shit. Why let it die a slow death? Just fucking kill it. Take it out. Say, enough. People don't want it. You don't want it. The governor doesn't want it. The governor's spokesman doesn't want it. The only people who ride it are the niggers anyway. So let's just get rid of it. That's my attitude right now. Let's just fucking get rid of it. If you're not going to do the fucking thing properly, drop it. Just drop it. We know you don't give a shit about the niggers and the spicks and whoever out there is you don't like. So you really want to wreck them. Just drop it and let's see how much work gets done. Because you can bitch all you want about the black people and the Hispanic people, but you know what? They're the ones that do the work in this fucking town. All the rich white money men couldn't make a damn penny if it wasn't for black people. And they're cutting their own throats. So drop it. Just drop MARTA. Sell off the trains, sell off the tracks, privatize it if you think anybody can make a profit off it, because you can't fucking make a profit off of it. And I'll tell you what I would do if I had total dictatorial control over it, is I would drop the fare to 50 cents, make my slogan there and back for a buck, increase the routes, increase the services, increase the maintenance, modernize it, and I would pay for it by taxing the shit out of these fucking redneck counties on the roads. I'd tax the shit out of cars. I'd tax the shit out of licenses. I'd tax the shit out of gas. Fuck them. Fuck them. And I would provide a transportation system that would be the envy of the fucking world. You can do it smart and you can make it work, but you don't want to make it work. And that's the bottom line for it. Take me out, Sarge.
The Cup of Joe Radio Show will be right back.
And we are back on the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, that URL is cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupofjoe.blogspot.com. And my email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. Fucking write me, okay? Is that too much to fucking ask for you to write? For you to get, you're not even putting a pen to the paper. Just get on there, go to the email, go to the damn blog, click on email Joe, and write me a letter and saying, hey Joe, I like you, or hey Joe, you suck. Write fucking something so I know somebody's listening out there. Christ almighty, what is it with you people? You young kids today, especially the guys on the radio, you young punks with your hair and your clothes. You're too young. You don't know yet. Why am I talking? I'm not Jewish. I'm Italian. I'm an Italian kid from Brooklyn. What the hell do I know from Jewish stuff? Speaking of Rant Radio, and kudos to all of my buddies on there. There's some good shows out there. But I was listening to Shoutbox's show the other day. Regan Walker in the Shoutbox. A pretty good show. And he seems like a cool enough guy. But we were in the IRC chat room. For those of you who are not familiar with IRC, I don't have time to get into it. Basically, it's just a way of people can chat with each other, typing in letters. If you're not already familiar with it, it would take me too long to explain it. But Rant Radio has its own little chat room. They have their own little server. And you can access that from their website, rantradio.com. And you can get instructions from there. At any rate, he was on there and he was talking about, oh, the economy is good. It's not as bad as you think. And he was saying that on his show, too. And I'm like, dude, what planet are you living on? What fucking planet are you living on? What country are you in? And then I took a look at his website, shoutboxradio.com, which is a good website. I like that logo there, the guy with the megaphone, by the way. And here I see is that Regan is a student at Southeast Missouri State University. And that explains a great deal. You're in college, dude. Either you were smart enough to get a scholarship or your parents were rich enough to send you there. But the fact of the matter is, you live in a completely fucking different world. I'll take responsibility for my own fuck-ups, thank you very much. And I'm not saying that it's my fault. I'm not saying that it's anybody's fault but my own that I didn't get a chance to go to college. I wish I could go now. The question is not a matter of time, because, you know, I do agree that it doesn't matter how old you are, you can always do that. The problem now is I can't do it and support myself at the same time. I just don't have that kind of energy anymore to spend however many hours doing schoolwork and however many hours working a week. It's tough enough for me just doing the job as it is. Perhaps one day if I become independently wealthy and I have an occupation that allows me to support myself while doing 20, 30 hours a week or so instead of 40 plus, then it would be a different story. But dude, don't speak of what you do not know. When you go out on your little, you know, road trips, or when you go to a restaurant or someplace like that, I want you to look around at the waitresses. I want you to look around at the people who are cooking your food and cleaning up after you. For most of us in this country, that is the real fucking world, dude. They're not going to have the same kind of opportunities you have. And all the hard work in the world that they do is not going to allow them to succeed in life. Whether it's their own fault for being trapped or whether it's our fault for not providing enough opportunities for them, we can get into that discussion at another time. But the truth of the matter is that you live in a completely different fucking world from these people. And maybe one day I'll get you on the show and we can discuss it, because I like you and I think you're a nice guy, but you're in college, man. You have no fucking clue. And the odds are you're going to graduate from college and maybe get a decent job, or maybe not. You know, the employment rate for college graduates is now actually worse than it is for high school dropouts. So maybe if I were you, I would keep staying in school, maybe become a professional student, and I would try to get some deferments if I were you, because you know the draft is coming up. Especially if and when, and I'm saying when because I firmly believe, even though I hate the idea of it, I firmly believe that the Bush people are going to get another 4 years. I will not say elected, because I don't think they were elected the first time, and I don't think they will be elected again. I think they'll use any amount of cheating that they possibly can, up until including politicizing another terrorist attack on this country if one comes. They're using fear very well. But dude, you might be winding up going to the service, man. So I would stay in college if I was you. I would try to figure out a way to become a professional student, get as many deferments as possible, because if these guys get another 4 years, you're fucked. You're fucked up the ass so bad. And that is the plain and unvarnished truth about it. So, but the economy is not good. I don't want to, you know, and I'm not going to sit here and quote statistics and this and that. You know, there are three types of lies. Lies, damn lies, and statistics. I don't fucking have to tell anybody anything. You go out there and you look for yourself. Talk to the people when you go to Taco Bell or McDonald's. Talk to the people who are serving your food and cooking your food for you. One of my regular writers, a guy named Steve, nice guy. Very nice guy, and he writes to me rather often. He's putting together, well, he calls it an audio blog. I like the term, but I really don't think what I'm doing is a blog. I do a radio show, an internet radio show. And that's fine, though, but I like the idea of audio blogs. I like the term. But Steve wrote me an email, and he says we shouldn't just be whining on these blogs or these radio shows. We should be out there openly engaging people, talking to them. And I agree with that. That's a good thing. And I actually do that quite a bit. There's a Taco Bell near where I work that I go eat at fairly regularly. I like Taco Bell. I'm sorry. I know they're not real Mexican food, and I'm not trying to pretend that I think that. I like Steak Burrito Supremes. What can I tell you? I just like them. But anyway, I go there, and I talk to those people all the time. I had a conversation with them about, you know, working and stuff like that. And I felt bad because I don't work as hard as these guys do, and I make like twice what they make. And I've learned over my 42 years that the better pay you get, the less you actually work. And if you can get yourself a good management position in some place, that's fine. Look, a lot of people just don't have these options, man. A lot of people don't have the options of going to college, or they don't have the opportunity presented to them because they were born poor and their parents don't understand how to help them out, and there's not enough state industry to help them to get what they need as far as getting a college is concerned. My father dropped out of high school when he was very young. My dad was born in 1921, and he lived through the Depression. And he never got a good education because he had to go out and go to work to help support his family. But after 1932 and from the 30s through the 60s, the working people of this country were given a much better shake. Granted, it was better if you were a white person. I'm not going to sit here and do a race thing, because it wasn't as good for black people as it was for white people, and I'm not questioning that at all. But for the most part, for working people in this country, things were much better. And when my dad got back from the war, and actually he spent the whole war in Hawaii, that lucky bastard. He's actually a Pearl Harbor survivor, so he was lucky to have gotten through that. But he was he worked in telecommunications out there. He ran the teletype machine. So he got to spend the war in Hawaii, pretty much, which is a pretty good gig, I guess. But when he came back, you know, he just got a job. He worked for the New York City construction. He helped keep the bridges in repair, the roads on the bridges and stuff like that. And he retired after 25 years with a decent pension plus Social Security. And he managed to save up enough to buy a house in Florida. And we moved to Florida in the late 70s. you know. And he could do that as a working guy back then. And he didn't have any college. Like I said, he didn't even graduate high school. He didn't have a high school diploma. But, and he was basically, I guess you would call him an unskilled worker at the beginning. But, you know, basically all he did was help fill potholes and things like that. You know, and I love my father. He's not the brightest guy in the world, but he's a very funny guy. I get my sense of humor from him. And he's a little bit more intelligent than he lets on to be. But the truth of the matter is he didn't have a lot of education. But because working people were sticking together back then, they had better opportunities for themselves. And Regan, man, I'm telling you, I understand to a certain extent where you're coming from because you're young and you haven't yet experienced the real world yet. And you may never get a chance to experience the real world because you're at least going to college. I'm not really sure what your situation is, whether you're getting in on a scholarship or your parents have enough money to send you there. In fact, I was reading an article in the New York Times about how the colleges are getting filled up with the sons and daughters of the very wealthy because they're the only ones who can afford to go to college. And some of the colleges are responding by waiving basically the tuition for some of the poor students. Education is the cornerstone of any decent civilized society. But we have to recognize that not everybody's going to be capable of getting an education. In fact, the majority of people are not going to be capable of getting a full-fledged college education. And that's what you need to get a really decent paying job in this country. And of course, it helps to have connections. And most of the very wealthy people in this country got that way because they began by inheriting money. There are a few people who were self-made. I'm not saying that it doesn't happen. I'm not even saying that it happens to a small minority, but I would think that I'm fairly certain that the overwhelming majority of people who have great wealth got it because they inherited it. And, you know, I don't personally think there's anything wrong with that. And I'm not trying to lay a whole, you know, class warfare distinction here because, quite frankly, you know, I think it's great if people can inherit money and do something with it and make something of their own life. I think that's wonderful. But as always, I draw the fucking line when they take that money and use it to get political power to enrich themselves at my expense. And again, I'm not going to sit here and quote statistics and numbers and all this and that and this and it's because that's all just bullshit to me and you can use that to justify anything. I just go by what the feeling is from the people I talk to and basically the word on the street. The economy is not fucking good, dude. You can spin it any way you fucking want. But the economy is not good. You think the economy is going great? Go ask some of those people who are serving you your meals. They're cleaning up after you. And you'll get a better idea of where the economy is going. Because it is simply not good. It could get better. I'm not saying it's going to stay this way. But especially if Bushco gets another 4 years, it's going to get even worse. Now, you know, I want to talk a little bit about the outsourcing thing because that's the latest, the new catchphrase. But I think it is a little overblown, and it's a good way to stir up anti-foreign sentiments. But the last thing we really need to do is be protectionist in this country. What we have to do, and I've talked about this before, is we have to start to look towards a global economy. And a global economy means consistent labor standards. You cannot have a global economy where you have one area of the world that earns pennies per hour, and another area of the world that earns dollars per hour. It won't work because the jobs are simply going to go to the places where it's going to cost them less. You need a global labor standard to go along with all the free trade agreements and things like that. You have to have that. You absolutely, positively have to have that. That's one of the reasons that I supported Governor Howard Dean when he was running for president. Oh, it's raining here. I don't know if you can hear that thunder, but it's raining here, and I hope lightning doesn't strike and mess up the recording. But anyway, that's one of the reasons that I supported Governor Dean was because he talked about that. He said if General Motors can move a plant down to Mexico and pay its workers penny an hour, why can't the UAW, United Auto Workers Union, go down there and organize the Mexican workers? They should be able to do that. And while, you know, in general, I'm a supporter of NAFTA because I'm a believer in a global economy because I think we're going to go to that anyway. But you have to have things in it that protect working people because, as I've said before, working people know no country. They're all the same. Whether you're in Vietnam or you're in Mexico or you're in China or you're in Thailand or you're in Central Europe or you're in Western Europe, you know, working people, excuse me, working people are the same. They want to go to work. They want to do their jobs to earn money so that they can support themselves and their families. And people, I'm not saying people have the right to have a job, but people have the right to know that if they get a job, that they're going to be earning a decent wage and getting fair pay for what their work. Because like I keep saying, labor comes first. You can't have capital without labor. That's what Lincoln said, and he was absolutely right. Our brothers and sisters in Western Europe, the industrial wealthy Western Europe, the Germans, the French, the Italians, they make a decent salary. They pay a lot higher taxes. I'm not going to deny that. They pay more taxes, but they get more government services for it. But they also have stronger unions out there. A worker in Germany gets 6 weeks paid vacation a year. 6 weeks! When was the last company that you see get that? And the wealth distribution in this country has gotten so out of hand. I mean, it's outrageous. You see these big executives, they get let go from their companies, basically, because they were incompetent jerks. And even though they managed to raise the shares for a little while because they basically let people go, they were running the company into the ground. And when they get let go, they get benefit packages worth more than some people have earned in their entire fucking lifetimes. What was it, the AT&T guy? He laid off like 40,000 people. 40,000 people lost their jobs, and he got something like, you know, $20 to $30 million, more than that. It was a lot of money. And for what? He could have kept those people working, and it would have helped the economy because people would buy stuff. I would love to get more stuff. I'd love to get a new computer, but how am I supposed to buy that? I make $11 and change an hour. And I'm barely getting by. And a lot of people are in the same boat. My dad, when he was in 1968, when he was in the union there, he was making $6.80 an hour in 1968, $6.50, $6.80, something like that. On that one salary, he could support a family of five. Can you tell me anybody who could support a family of five on $6.50 an hour? And where was I reading that article or talking to somebody about how there are people, especially out in California, where the cost of living is very high, where they're working two jobs, they're working 70 hours a week, and they still have to be on food stamps because they can't afford to pay their kids because their salaries are so low. They can't afford to feed their kids because their salaries are so low. And these people get sneered at for using food stamps. You know, my wife and I were on food stamps for a while when we had the kids. We were getting $450 a month, and that barely covered it. That barely covered it. Because when you have two teenage boys, man, they eat. And they eat a lot. So, you know, don't be down on these people all the time. And don't be sitting there giving me this, oh, if you work hard enough, you know, that's all bullshit, man. Regan, I'm telling you right now, that's all bullshit. What are you, 19, 20, 21 years old at the most? You have no fucking clue, man. You're going to college, and you're in college right now. And it may be that you're working a job to support yourself while you're going to school, and that's fine. And you may be one of those types of real go-getters and stuff like that, and that's fine. But you have to recognize the fact that not everybody's going to be that way. And you also have to recognize the fact that not everybody's going to get the kind of opportunities that you've had. And I know it's not just talking towards Reagan. I'm talking towards anybody out there who's young and who thinks the same thing, that they'll just get by. You know, and it simply doesn't fucking work that way. It absolutely simply doesn't. When you're talking about real money, when you're talking about real wealth, the type that puts you above and beyond worrying about whether you're going to be able to pay your bills and stuff, that stuff doesn't come from hard work. That comes from having connections, or that comes from a little luck, or that comes from you being willing to screw anybody in order to get it. And I see by the clock on the wall, unfortunately, I'm going to have to cut this short right here because I only got about a minute or so left. I want to thank Steve, and I want to thank Vince, my email people, and I want to thank Ben Birch of the White Rose Society, and Sumerian and Smokehouse at rantradio.com, and the people at radiopower.org for putting me on their radio stations and helping me get the word out, spreading the word for the working man and for people working out. Reagan, I hope you wake up, and I hope you grow up a little bit in that sense. I don't mean like you're immature, but I really think that you need a little bit more experience before you can start talking about how good or bad the economy is. So, any rate, Sergeant Sock Puppet, say goodbye.
Goodbye, Joe.
And this is Joe Vecchio saying goodbye with the Cup of Joe Radio Show. Until next time.